Hey guys, it's your favorite sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. On the show, you'll hear caregivers confessing the good, the bad, and the completely unexpected. You're guaranteed to relate, be inspired, leave with helpful tips and resources, and of course, laugh. Now, let's jump right in to today's guest confession. All right. So today, ladies, we have our friend Leisha Thompson with us. And boy, does she have quite the confession. I am so excited to have you here, Leisha. You know, Jay, as always, she'll be sharing the good, the bad, and the ugly related to caregiving. And we all can relate. Yep. So Jay, you know, you gotta tell us a little bit more about Leisha. Let's just get right on into it.
Okay, we're just going to jump into it. So, so I'm going to say, Leisha, right off the bat, you have led a very busy life. So you, at the same time that you were married, you were being the mother of two, and you were advancing your career, you spent 22 years at Macy's.
Do you get a discount there? I really want a discount.
I still do. Yes.
Okay, now, hold on, Natalie. You were the National Workers' Comp Director. And so you, the National Workers' Comp Director of the Return to Work, Managed Care, and Vendor Relations. So, but I love this because 2020, you took all that experience and you said you just made a complete lifestyle change. And I'm like, that is fantastic.
We support a whole change, like quit your job and do something different kind of thing.
I know.
That's right.
Mission right now is to redefine values, vision, and thoughts so people can thrive and take action. And I know Natalie, Emily, and I love that because we always want to, you know, just take action. Caregiving wise, you have, of course, your two girls, but caregiving wise, there was a time in your life when you helped take care of your mother, your father, as they went through health issues. But you pulled family together. They were divorced. You pulled them together, made sure they were part of your children's life when you said, you know, basically they were not speaking. That kind of, you know, once they divorced.
I love that she said, I'm sorry, people, pull it together.
We're coming back and we're celebrating at birthday parties. So that's kind of, I mean, I'm like, okay, I got to know how you did this. But also, you know, during all of this, you know, I need to know, like, okay, let's talk about this because you have cared for, you're kind of that sandwich person where you're caring for your family, you're caring for parents. We'll toss in there a little later that you wrote a book.
In her free time.
So let's jump right in there and let's kind of get started. We may go backwards. You know,
you never know which direction.
Yeah, I know. So like, tell me where are you when you start taking care of your parents? Is this after you've launched your own business or where is that?
Yeah, yes. No. So that happened. My daughters were actually in college then. And I can't remember. One had graduated the year prior and the other one, I believe, was a junior, I think. Yeah. So, I was still working full time. Life was status quo at that point until my mom's health declined first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then subsequently, I would say, I don't know, a few months after she passed, then I was immediately back into the caregiving role because then my father's health declined, which I knew was coming when my mom was still alive. Nearing the end is when cancer for him returned.
I want to push back farther because this is the thing that's interesting because this is something that we haven't talked about yet in any of our podcasts is parents who are divorced. So you're like wrangling a lot of kitty cats because you were
exactly.
younger, your parents divorced, and then kind of just a brief high level 10,000 over that.
Yeah. So I was 12, I believe, sixth grade when my parents got a divorce, which I would have to say, even as a kid, I wanted them to because it was not working at all. And I was just like, you know, I love both of you, but you're terrible together. And so I vividly remember the day that my mom picked me up at sixth grade. She came to school. It was winter. So it was kind of that day was there were snow flurries. And I remember a friend, one of her close friends from church came and found me at school or whatever. So she said, hey, your mom's outside. I go outside and the car is packed. And I get in the front seat and I look at my mother and I go, so we're moving.
Wow.
And she's like, literally, we're going to look for a place. Like the car is packed. School's over. So it's the end of the school day. And that's how it began. And I remember saying, thank you. It is time for you to do this.
So isn't it funny how kids know?
The kids always know. And these parents think, oh, we're just going to trick them. But the kids always know.
No. And so that was, for me, the beginning of seeing her being fully independent. Mm-hmm. Because she had tried to be, which was part of the issue that occurred with my dad, because he did not want her to be at all.
Yeah.
And in fact, did things to stop her from being independent. Mm. And so that taught me a lot, right? As a woman, well, then as a kid growing up, but looking back, it taught me a lot about resiliency, and then also knowing who you are as a person, and then honoring it and refusing to let obstacles deter you from that, despite what it is. Because a lot of women back then would not have done what she did. She went back to college because she had finished 1 year of college in Atlanta. We lived in Cincinnati. And this is before I was born. But they dated, I guess, when she was in high school or whatever. He went to the military, to the Army. She went to college, but he's 5 years older than my mom. Mm. So long story short, she comes back to Ohio and didn't have enough money to go back for a sophomore year for housing and everything involved, and got a job. So at that point, right, she only got 1 year of college. And so after I was born, she decided that she was going back, changed her major, did a whole career change. And that's when it got probably very difficult for their marriage.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't, you know, at that time, women were still not necessarily pursuing college as often, I guess. So interesting times.
She was independent to a certain extent. I mean, if she was still going out to college, she was pursuing that. And then it maybe the relationship itself just kind of pushed that down for that time period that they were married.
So they got divorced. And that, again, we were just talking before we started about, you know, Gwen and our guy from Coldplay, like having their conscious uncoupling. So did they consciously really uncouple for a long time then? And you had kids and you were like, you laid down the hammer and said, look, you people, you're going to be part of my kids' lives, whether you like each other or not.
Yeah, because I had grown up doing things separately with them, which worked until I started thinking, okay, now I'm married, my child's going to be one, and they will need to figure this out. Like it even prior to that, it had started becoming slightly difficult and troublesome personally for me, not for them, but for me. Because, you know, what am I doing? I'm going to have separate birthday parties for my kid, you know.
That's crazy.
No. So anyway, I remember having that conversation and I really didn't ask them. I just said, this is what we're doing. We're going to make this change. We're doing this. You both will be showing up. You figure it out.
I love that. You just said figure it out. It's like a slap.
It's not on me. This is for your grandchild. Then I had another one 2 years later, even more important for you to figure these things out. And it was visibly awkward for them for a long time, but I just didn't pay attention to it.
I'm kind of thinking how that's going to work for Emily. She and her husband are divorced.
We'll say ex-husband.
Yeah. Ex-husband.
Ex-husband.
Sorry.
Of course. Yeah. So I too, single parent of three kids, worked, ran, but still have those kind of same gender roles as your mom and dad, that I stayed at home with three kids. He was military, went to work, always supported greatly, but we ended up, you know, unfortunately divorcing, but we had the two birthday parties separate. And, you know, now we're talking about weddings, the kids getting married eventually. And so that brings up concerns because we really do not communicate
It was funny watching them as adults because they were kind of like, didn't really want to. I mean, but I pushed it a little because I just, that wasn't important. It was about the kids.
That's right.
At least that's how I viewed it. Some of my friends disagreed with my thought process.
Yeah. I like it. I like it.
I kind of like it. It's like a slap. You get over yourselves because I think it's what it comes down to is it's not about you.
Right. And that's so what I kept saying.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
So you have the girls, which I love because we're girls, and probably the dogs were girls. And so the girls are growing up somewhere in between. Your marriage doesn't work out. But here's the interesting thing, girls, is that your ex-husbands, it's your in-laws, right?
Yeah.
You're super tight with your in-laws who've been married like 1,000 years. Like I want them to be my in-laws as well. And so you've got this, like, it's so interesting. And I know we're talking about caregiving, but I think this is important because you've got these breaks, but you still say relationships are important.
Absolutely.
And so, because at some point, somebody's going to end up, as we're all aging every day, I'm a little bit older. Mm-hmm. And so how do you support that? And so let's push forward to kind of like, what was life like? You said that your daughters were in college, wanted getting ready to graduate or whatever. And then the other was in. your mom gets sick. And so she, because both your parents, do they live close by?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then
30 minute drive here or there, but
yeah, that's pretty much the same. Right. And so you were all like, that's the same. So right. What do you, how's that relationship at that point as they're aging and you're supporting them? Like, where did it kind of start? Like as caregiving, did you slow into it?
No. So, vividly remember, cause it was fall. My mom had actually just purchased a new car, had me go with her to purchase this new car, which I thought was unnecessary because the car she had, by then she had retired, that car didn't have like extreme mileage. And she was very independent, still traveling, had launched another business. Wow. Was an educator, elementary school principal. So she retired and then she built it, an after school program, but housed it at the church. So she was still educating because she had staff and tutors and, you know, a computer lab and all these things at the church.
Wow.
And so very active. And then started having some health issues, which actually was the second time around, but she had overcome before and successful life. So in my mind, you know, but it quickly started declining after buying that car. And so I just remember I kept thinking, why was this car necessary? But then I realized in hindsight, I think she knew that this time might be different because she had given her other car to my oldest daughter. Which meant then this new one I gave to the other. And I thought that's how my mother, she always looked out and made things equal for them, for my kids. So anyway, but yeah.
That's interesting.
Yep. So I end up, you know, she was very lucid. I mean, it didn't, and she had COPD and congestive heart failure. So her mind was the same. It, you know, how she approached life never changed. So she orchestrated everything from the beginning of her health decline all the way through hospice. She signed her own paperwork for her admission to hospice. And I kept wanting to get up to go take the pen away. But then I thought, but she's willingly doing all these things.
Wow.
But that bothered me because who signs the paperwork, you know? And then she looked at me and we were at the hospital. She looks at me and she says, don't worry. I have whatever the insurance is called. Now I'm drawing a blank on what it's called, but for inpatient stays when you, if you,
oh yeah, the hospital coverage.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So she's like, oh, don't worry. I have, you know, and I wasn't worrying about that. I'm worrying about,
she's thinking
this
about
is
the
where we are. Like, this is where we are in life. I can't even process because I had just had the meeting with the physicians. My two cousins came into town, one from Chicago, one flew in from New York. And cause I said, I'm going to have this conference with the doctor. I know that it's not going to be good. That was on Friday. They came into town on the weekend. So they went with me and we literally left the meeting and they said, okay, you'll meet with the hospice care team. And I'm okay, fine. Cause I'm processing. Cause I didn't know we were going to have a hospice conversation until we were in the meeting. Right. And so I'm processing, but we get to my mom's room, same hospital, and they show up within 5 minutes. So I don't even have time to process what we're doing. I mean, like I know what we're doing, but in my, you know, that's, you tell me, and then I'm meeting the hospice team. Like, so, but yeah, so my mom orchestrated, handled all of that, had the conversation. They're telling her on average about 3 days, like, oh, and I'm, yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God.
So let me ask you this, cause I'm dying to know, girls jump in whenever, but I mean, cause I'm like, and then what happened? So did you and your mom have conversations about her medical beforehand? Because how much were you involved in like finances? Cause I know our other guests have talked about like, oh, you need to know, work with your parent about finances and all the documentation and whatever. Did your mom, cause she sounds super independent.
Yeah.
Did she have those conversations with you?
We had already, she had for years, like she was an international traveler for after retirement. So she would tell me every time before she got ready to leave, she would take me and show me where she had all, you know, her file cabinets and all these things, where all her important papers were. It always made me very uncomfortable. And she would always say, well, you need to know just in case, I mean, because I'll be over in Europe or, you know, whatever. And so, so I knew that. I knew where all the keys and everything were. But when she was in the hospital and all that, I mean, she had planned out everything. So financing, it wasn't an issue. She had already done all of her, you know, her will, all that paperwork had been done years prior. Yeah. So none of that was an issue. It was purely trying to navigate through the ever evolving changes in diagnosis. But then also because of my career in the work comp industry and working with managed care and the nurses and all that for return to work, I knew how to read medical reports and test results and all of that. So, and medications and things of that nature. So that wasn't the challenge. Even though I wanted her to get second opinions and she didn't necessarily want to do that because she had confidence in her her healthcare team.
Yeah.
Which I don't want anyone to be that confident because they're human, right? There could be a mistake. There could be something right. that was overlooked. And so I was in there saying different things.
It's just your mom too. I mean, right. it's the flip side. It's you right. know, your work, you have one mind, but your mom, mm-hmm. you kind of are, that's totally different.
Right. Right. Mm. So, yeah. So it, I don't know that it would have mattered at the end of the day. Having an earlier second opinion may not have mattered, but mm-hmm. it, who knows, you know, maybe it would have. So.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Was the experience and with your dad, his organization, exactly the same? His plan?
Oh, I already knew it wasn't.
What a question you should ask.
Yeah, because you've just gone from a almost like a hands off, but you're just your caregiver responsibilities was supportive in nature, right. supportive of her decisions.
We partnered. We partnered. We talked every day, always, anyway. But we talked about that, and we partnered through and made joint decisions. Mm. So, and I had to pull back because she was totally equipped and right. and orchestrated. I mean, there was a situation once when her medications were delivered to her in the hospital, and she knew that it was incorrect that. That's not what they look like. And that she knew that the number, a whole thing was off. And she had a conversation with the person who brought them. And the conversation didn't go well. In my mom's opinion, she felt disrespected. And, and so she's telling me this. And I said, well, let me go talk to them. And she stopped me. And she said, no, I will take care of this because I have to be here and I have to be dependent upon them. And she's like, you can't go out there like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I hear a lot. It's almost, I feel like the child side, I feel like we got a therapy session going on a little bit, like the child side, the child in you was not ready. And, mm-hmm. and your mom was just, it's so interesting. She's such a strong woman, which I get right. that sense from you too. And I know that you pass that to your daughters, which makes my yeah. heart just sing. So your mom passes. And then a couple of months later, cause I know that you were probably still just kind of, your mind is like
processing.
Trying to absorb that. Mm-hmm.
So let me correct. So it wasn't even a few months later, his health started declining. She was still alive. So mm-hmm. I knew that there was a finite amount of time before I'd be taking him to chemotherapy is kind mm-hmm. of what I knew. And so, it was just a few months after. So although he didn't need me to be a caregiver right after she passed, but mentally I'm processing, I can't believe she left. And then knowing I have this short unknown amount of time. So my youngest daughter was still in college and had just moved into an off-campus house that she was renting with friends. And I remember telling my dad about it. And this child is very petite. And so he always worried about her because of her size and mm-hmm. that people often and still do assume that she's a lot younger than she is. Mm-hmm. So he kept saying, I need to see this house because she's leaving campus. Like she's too mm-hmm. young and small. And so I remember having that conversation with her, like, I got to bring him like ASAP because I don't know how long before we're in chemo and things. Yeah. So we did do that just so he could have peace of mind. And yeah. I just remember that moment because I knew then that's the last time he's going to be on campus. That's the last yeah. time, you know, mm-hmm. all of those things would, and they had just lost their grandmother a few months, just in a few months. So mm-hmm. yeah, very challenging.
So your
kid was not hands-on.
He's yeah.
the total opposite.
Okay.
He had always controlled everything in his life. But I think he became maybe overwhelmed with the way he was feeling because he had been he was a cancer survivor for, I don't know, 20 years, maybe. I don't know. Yes. I can't remember now, but more than 10 years. So he was thriving, living life, still driving a Corvette, doing all, working out in the gym.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
He's
living his best life, too.
Yeah. He's working out so the gym, driving the a thing. Corvette. Ooh. Right. So it caught him off guard, too.
Yeah.
And, but then he also couldn't retain, like when the physician asked you for dates, when did you notice this? What happened and blah, blah, blah. He could not recount things without a struggle. But he had a friend who had been taking notes and had a phenomenal memory. And so thankfully, I was able to partner in that way, though I didn't want her necessarily to be that involved.
Yeah.
But I appreciated it once I made peace with that because that was his choice that they had this relationship that I thought was interesting, but it became very helpful. And she and I are still friends because she's a beautiful person.
Yeah.
And it worked out very well that there were then two of us helping him when mm-hmm. his health got to the point where he needed help. So that was
that's a total tag team caregiving because as a caregiver, I think this is important. I mean, you're going to have lots of opinions, right?
Yes, right.
As a caregiver and what people think you should do. And when your loved one says, I want this person involved too. And because you're an only child, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm an only child.
And so you're like, I'm the person, I'm the daughter. I should be here with what we believe that we're told that we should be doing.
Right.
And then he's got this other person in the two-seater saying she sits here.
Yeah.
Then that's, I would think that would be hard, but it takes a big person to set aside your own personal stuff
mm-hmm.
and say,
once I got to know her, cause I didn't know her that well at the time. And I wasn't even sure why they were in this relationship because it seemed odd. So, but when I got to know her, I recognized that she was a good person and she had high moral standards and all the things. And so they were helping each other for different reasons. And mm-hmm. that was kind of how that relationship played out. And so that meant, again, it's not about me. Put aside my feelings because they care for each other and they work well together. And that's all I needed to know. So, she and I became very close through that year, maybe if it was a year where mm-hmm. We worked together on his care. Mm. So, but yeah, it was pivotal because my mother, as you heard, orchestrated and she held all her own conversations. She was her advocate. I was her co-pilot, maybe if you want to call it that. And so I, you know, on the sidelines, I'm nodding in agreement or I'm saying we need to talk about this, mom, mm-hmm. separately, things of that nature. But it was a true partnership. But with my dad, there was a time when I took him to the emergency room because he was hemorrhaging, basically. And we go to the ER and they triage him and they say he needs a test and that I would take him home and then call and schedule the test. This was on a weekend, so I can't call this provider until Monday. So I'm thinking, well, we're at the ER because he's bleeding. And your expectation is that I take him home and then phone on Monday to schedule a test. And they said, yes. Like this was normal. And I remember I internally, I'm thinking, this is insane. And so I remember I'm trying to be calm, you know, and professional. And I'm looking at my dad's poor face and I could see that he was not only worried, but in that moment, he totally gave up. Because he looked at me in my eye and he said, this is after I had the conversation with the physician. And he said, you're the boss going forward. You're the boss. Well, we had always had this longstanding joke because he would always laugh and say to my kids and to me, he'd always go, I'm the boss. I'm the boss. I get to tell you all what to do. I'm the boss. Mm-hmm. You know, so in that moment, he in sad face, which broke me down because even though it had been a joke, I knew that he was serious. But, so I'm saying to the physician, I'm sorry, but he won't be leaving the hospital. You'll need to admit him.
Yeah.
And then we'll take it from there. And so I remember the doctor says, well, what do you want me to do? And that's when I said, you know what? I don't want you to do anything. I got this. I remember like, don't worry about it. Because in my mind, I thought, you're useless. I don't need you. Because what you're saying to me makes zero sense. Yeah. And there's no way I'm taking an 80, at that time, I think he was 82. I'm not taking an 82-year-old who is, I can see where he's losing blood. Like, it's not. And so I went into prayer. I went into a hallway in the hospital. And I just remember, because I thought, I don't really know what to do other than to call his primary care physician or whatever, but I will not be, we're not leaving. You'll have to admit him. When I got back to where my dad was, and the physician came back in and he said, okay, we will be admitting your father. I'm just like, why would you say what you said and make me have this emotional, all the things. But that's when I recognized there's truth behind the fact that sometimes people look at elderly people and they, despite the fact that the patient still has the will to live, mm-hmm. And the family is supportive, but yet the physician is saying things that would have made my dad's health condition decline even more rapidly.
Yeah.
Beyond the fact that he would have been physically, mentally uncomfortable and probably could have died on my watch had I said yes.
Yeah. So I hear all this of you caring for your parents, but did you hit like a crossroads before, when they started getting sick, your girls were already in college. So did you feel like you had a little bit of a break being, a full-time mommy, and then it just went straight to caretaking your parents?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Because I didn't see it coming because my parents didn't see it. They were fine. So it just sort of happened with her. And then when his health started declining, she started helping me to look for resources for people to come to his home. Just because he started,
she did.
which was interesting because she didn't have to do that.
Right.
But we had conversation around that, and then when I told him about her health, and then he was with me in the car, actually, when I got the call from the hospital about coming in for that visit on that Monday. So he was in the car and I just pulled into his driveway, bringing him back from some tests. So when I get this news, he's with me. Mm-hmm. So then I tell him what I heard, and I could see the concern on his face too, which I had never seen.
Yeah.
And so then he became, he started asking me questions like, you're taking care of both of us. Are you still going to the gym? Cause working out is essential. And are you getting proper sleep? And I would literally not tell the truth because I didn't want him to think that it was his, because of him, that I couldn't do these things.
Yeah.
So I would go,
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
how did you manage, you know, caring for both of them? Like, I know it was kind of an impasse for me, like, you know, kids going into college, you know, adulting, and then bam, I'm here taking care of mom. There wasn't much of a break of like
a break in between. No break. Yeah. But you know, I honestly, I didn't think about it like that at all. It was, I'm the only child. These are my parents. I owe them everything. Mm-hmm. So we'll figure it out. We'll just figure it out day to day as best as possible. And we did. And that worked. It the lessons came after both of them had passed. I had I had missteps, obviously. You know, I'm in this lifestyle with them, but I'm also leading teams at work and a department. So and I always went to work, right? Normally before this happened.
Oh, wait a second. So you didn't take any FMLA, intermittent FMLA. You didn't use your benefits as benefits queen of Macy's.
And that was the huge misstep. And that's exactly where I was going, because that's the lesson I preach to other people now. Wow. Because it never occurred that even though my team, myself, I worked with the team in leave of absence every day for decades. I knew them intimately. We talked about, you know, the well-being of employees and who was eligible, who needed accommodations because they were running out of eligibility for their leave, their FMLA, intermittent leave, and all of those things. I knew that world, but it didn't seem to, I didn't think I needed it because I was managing everything. So I went to work every day. Right. I went to work every day. I came and I was used to being exhausted. That had been my way of life from the time my children were born until they got till they left and moved into a dorm because, you know, all the things that they were involved in and everything I'm trying to teach them and whatever. So that wasn't unusual to me. I knew how to survive, even though I was fatigued. And so becoming their caregiver simultaneously for that period of time, to me, it was a lot, but that's what you do. I mean, life throws you curves, you rise to the challenge and you make it work. So it wasn't until after my dad had passed and I went on a vacation, and then I don't know, a few months later, I still felt extremely fatigued and I couldn't understand why. I knew I was tired when he passed. And I remember thinking, okay, now I'll be able to just get some sleep because I had gotten to the point of being accustomed to getting phone calls, you know, all through the night or whatever. And so I thought, okay, well, now I can get rest, but I never felt rested. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started thinking something's wrong. And then when I would walk, I parked 2 blocks away from my office at work. And so I would always power walk it and on purpose. And I couldn't do that without being winded when I got to the door, and that got my attention. And so I went to a scheduled a complete physical because I knew then something's not right. Still not thinking it has anything to do with everything that had gone on, but my numbers were off. I had gained weight, all these things. And so we do all these tests and I'm still thinking, okay, I just need some time and I need to get this weight off. But so I'm out running. And then I remember having some, I also had about an hour and a half drive in traffic home after work the most days. And so I remember one day I started feeling like a pinching sensation on the left. So I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm having a heart attack. And so I drive home and I call my primary care physician and I said to him, pretty sure I'm having a heart attack right now. So he asked me these questions. He goes, I guarantee you're not having a heart attack. And we talked through, what did you do yesterday and the day before? So I said, oh, so I went to the gym and I was running and this, that, and the other. He's like, well, how far did you run? And I go, about 3.5 miles. And he goes, you're not having a heart attack. And so I didn't believe him because I'm known to diagnose others and myself.
Absolutely.
Love that. That's a diagnosis.
That's Dr. Thompson. Google. Dr. Thompson.
So, you know, so I go in anyway, it ends up being that my cholesterol was up, or my heart rate was off a little, but not, you know, I didn't have like high blood pressure needing medication and all that, but I did go through the test and everything. So I realized, okay, I'm not having a heart attack. We go on a vacation. I come back from vacation and my daughter, we had a conversation in the car about my addiction to Diet Coke and all these things came out, you know, they saw on the vacation. So I go, okay, so that's a Friday, Saturday. I go in a gym that is owned by my neighbor, former NFL football player. And I said, I need a trainer. I need this person to be aggressive. Otherwise I'm prone to jump in and think that I know what I'm talking about, even in an area that I don't know, which would be being a trainer. So I get my trainer and it was rough, but I wanted that because I don't know. I had to get the weight off ASAP is what my thought process was. And I'm cleared to exercise. So I got to go hard because that's what you do. And so I realized maybe a couple months in working with him one day I'm there and I realized I felt good. I was exhausted because of the workout, but I felt good and I hadn't felt good for a while. And so that's when I realized the power of mental and physical, you know, putting them together. And I promise you, going to the gym, pushing myself beyond my self-imposed limitations that I had mentally and physically, because I was on a track team growing up in school and stuff, but I hadn't competed and done anything that strenuous since the end of my sophomore year in high school, because we didn't have a track team the last 2 years. So I'm in it like now at 50, whatever, pushing and doing all these things that I hadn't done in all those years. So it was tough, but it was necessary for me in my mind at the time to get my body stronger. What I didn't realize is that transferred over to my mental strength. And I vowed then that I would always be in the gym. I still am. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that I will work out until I can't, because it changed my life. I promise that. I know that that's what happened during my trainer had no idea, but I knew what was happening. I could feel it. I could see it. And then I started having progress, right? And losing weight, but not the way I wanted. It was taking too long. So again, I talked to my primary care physician. He gives me a referral of a woman who he says, I know you both well. I'm sure your personalities will mesh. Mm-hmm. So I call her. She's a nutritionist and she was very aggressive and she made me mad like the second visit. but I got it together. I got it together, right? Because I couldn't, it was too much to process. Like she's telling me the calories, the this, the that, the change, when it was a lot. And I remember just shutting down for a while until she said, did you read the material that I gave you? And I said, No, absolutely did not. And, you know, and I'm sitting there like, why is she talking to me like I'm five? Well, because I'm giving her behavior of a 5 year old. So I go home, I read everything, I get it together. This is what I want. This is what I need to do. And man, so then I lost in a year, I lost 9 pounds on my own, working out and crawling on the floor because I'm so fatigued after the workouts, right? I get with her and I lose 16 pounds in about maybe 5 months. Mm. So,
what's mindset?
So it was mindset.
You're doing all this stuff because, you know, honestly, caregivers do not typically during the care journey, they don't take care of themselves. And if I know I've read statistics about individuals who actually have, if they have gained a lot of weight, they don't take care of themselves, they start having very serious health issues. And so that impacts them. And there are caregivers who pass.
Before the person that they were caring for.
Well, even then, and or shortly thereafter. And so the stats are there. So you do all these things and over a window of time, it sounds like a year and a half. Yeah. And then you decided and then you're like, okay, so you're feeling better. And you say, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. So some time goes by after that, though, a few years after the caregiving ends, but I'm still working out. And I'm feeling good about my career. I get a promotion right after my dad passed, like all these things were happening. So that's great because it was a huge promotion. But in 2018 is when I start feeling, it was fourth quarter because I always do my first quarter, my annual goals for my team in the fourth quarter. So I'm doing my personal and my, you know, professional goals and plans. And I remember thinking then also, I notated that I'm not feeling jazzed up about my career anymore. It's great. I've loved it. I've had a lot of success, but I believe there's something different I'm supposed to do, but I didn't know what it was, but I knew it had something to do with coaching. And so I began looking for coaching programs that in January of 2019, and I decided that I'm giving myself a year to figure it out. And I'm going to leave in no later than December of 2019. So I've got to figure it out because that's my end date. Regardless. Okay. So then I'm thinking they've offered a severance package to people at my level and age for 5 years. And I've declined each time because I kept saying, I'm too young. I'm not of retirement age, blah, blah, blah. I love what I'm doing. So I thought, okay, now I feel differently. So when they offer it, I'll accept it, but they didn't offer it. And I'm thinking, are you kidding? I'm ready. And so a couple months go by and I think, man, I have nothing to lose. I should ask if they will offer it.
Absolutely.
And so I go to the controller of the company. I schedule a meeting because I believe that this person has the ability to make it happen, right? So we have a conversation. I remember her looking at me and she goes, "Are you asking me to sever you?" And I said, "I would appreciate if you could make that happen for me. Offer the package that I've declined. I am now ready to accept it. Yes." And then when I left her office, I pressed the button for the elevator and I'm waiting. And I thought I was going to pass out right there. I broke out in sweat.
What have I done? I just quit my really good job. And right. So,
yeah. I leave the building because now I need to go take a walk.
Or a prayer or something.
I mean, right, because it's not in my head anymore. Like I premeditated this conversation several times to articulate it in the way that I felt was appropriate so that I could get the yes. But then when it was became audible, now it's real, right? Mm-hmm. So that got me.
So let me ask you a question, because I'm gonna push it there. I'm gonna stop it there. Yes. Do you think that your caregiving journey influenced the after? Because I know what you end up going to and writing a book and you're coaching people about, you know, their life and caregiving and even divorce. Because you
and divorce. No, it took me a while to figure out what my niche was and to own it. And then when I finally got the full clarity, I just remember like that was right there in front of my face. And I didn't know the whole time. And I didn't know, but I knew corporate was 22 years in corporate was amazingly great for me. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I felt led to do something different and I just didn't know what. So yeah, so I wrote the book. The book is what gave me the clarity to figure out my words and my chapters and how is this book going to help people? And that's when I started getting the clarity. Like, I know what it feels like to be a divorced mom whose dad, their dad was, I don't want to send any signals or messages that he was very involved, very active with our kids. So we were fine when it came to showing up for our children. But I'm still a single mom building a career. And then my parents and then they pass. And then now my values have changed. And that was the part I want to touch on really quickly in closing. Having been divorced and a former caregiver, the way I viewed my future and just the world in general, it's a great place, but we have a limited, a finite amount of time to be alive and to thrive. And so I want people to recognize you don't have to have gone through some major life-changing event, but most of us will at some point. It's who you become after and the lessons that you learn from your journey that I want people to use in positive ways versus being overwhelmed and maybe just uncertain about the future. People know they've been changed. They know that they need to make some edits in how they live or think. They just don't know how. So a lot of times nothing happens and they become frustrated, right? And that's what I don't want. And I saw that in all those years of leadership. So everything I'm doing now comes from all of that, like being a leader, having teams, seeing people come into work broken because of something at home that they just didn't address. And then it bleeds out onto their coworkers and low productivity or whatever. So my journey has come, what I'm doing now feels 100% right for me. And I'm just very thankful to be able. And so I'm not the reluctant caregiver. My reluctance came after, or maybe I was reluctant to ask for help. Yeah. Reluctant.
I mean, you did not take
help.
FMLA. I mean, honestly, I want to know what reluctance looks like. It's like, I can do it because I can tell you, I would think I can do it. And I'm sure we've all thought, I don't need any help. I can do it myself. Right. And the reality is you don't have to.
You don't
and
have
it doesn't
to.
Make you weak. Exactly. And it doesn't make you bad. So,
no.
You know
no.
what?
And it denies people of helping their friend, right?
Honestly,
or their family member who they love too. Mm-hmm. So a lot of lessons were learned.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Other people is a perfect way for self-care is when you help others is a perfect way for self-care. Yeah. You know what though? Cause right now we got to do it quick, but I want to have sister questions.
All righty. All right.
Emmy, do you want to start with the first sister question?
Goodness. I feel like I've asked a ton of questions. You know, for myself, like, how did you get through this?
Okay, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. Cause you did really good.
How did your daughters like transition in this time? Like, how did it affect your children?
So my parents were at my oldest daughter's college graduation, clearly struggling though with their health and their mobility. So although my kids had come home to visit their grandparents, I think that probably became the pivotal point in knowing that, even in that short window that when they had gone back to school or whatever after Thanksgiving and things that their grandparents' health work had declined exponentially. So it was tough. And then they were very close to both of my parents. So them processing that both their parents had passed in that short period of time was very challenging for both of them. And then my youngest daughter was still in school too, in college. Yeah. So yeah, it was tough.
Jay?
A couple of words that you used, which was you have the ability, once something happens, you always have the opportunity to edit that. You know, you can, there's edits, which I'd love to edit. You know, you got to remember that you can make those edits. But one thing that you also mentioned was we always talk about FMLA. And I think there's so many people out there that should take FMLA. Would you say, Lisha, that most of the companies out there, that's available to employees? And what should they do to pursue that?
Yeah,
did they just forget to ask?
No, which, and see, and in my case, it wasn't that I forgot. I did not even consider that it was there. Like I was fine. But no, it's there for a reason, right? And so, yes, you just request the paperwork, fill out the paperwork. Okay. Everything is kept confidential. So you're the person that you report to can't and shouldn't even know why you're off. They just know that you're on an approved leave of absence. And, you know, they're kept in the loop as far as the timing of it. But, and it varies depending on, you know, your hire date or whether you've previously utilized a leave. And so you have to have eligibility. But that process to determine if it's available is fairly quick. So yes, an intermittent leave versus a full leave, you know, you might just need some days off or you might just need hours off. Maybe you go part-time instead of full-time for a defined period of time. Mm-hmm. It's there for a reason. It's a benefit.
Ask. That's it. Everybody needs to ask for help. And I think there's help out there. We just need to ask. And sometimes we talk about it.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Last and favorite question is always, I like to claim it as mine. The girls just let me, is what is your favorite guilty pleasure? Because I felt like it's Diet Coke, but I feel like it's not Diet Coke anymore.
It's cheddar cheese popcorn.
Oh,
I have an addiction, you all. I must admit. Okay. I have been known to leave home at 10 o'clock at night and go to the grocery store.
Yes. It's like a pregnancy craving. You have to have it. It does not go away.
Is it a small bag or is it a big bag? You can tell
it's a big bag.
Absolutely.
This all began in the sixth grade, maybe, because my neighbor's mom introduced us to cheddar cheese popcorn. Okay. And so I've had, you know, times when we broke up. The cheddar cheese and I have broken up, but we always relapse when we come back together.
It's okay.
It's a healthy, unhealthy relationship.
It's very unhealthy.
It's the cheese and maybe the cheddar part is the unhealthy, but the popcorn is the healthy.
Right.
Okay. Your secret is safe with us and all the people that listen to the podcast. We're so okay.
Absolutely. It's fine.
Lisha, thank you so much for coming on. I've learned a lot. And especially, like I said, my word is, we can always make edits.
Edits.
You don't have to be frustrated.
And there are no mistakes. They're just missteps. Therefore, we can edit. So,
It's beautiful. We want to thank everybody for listening as well today. We have enjoyed our time with everybody. And hope, Natalie, that they will listen again.
I hope they do too.
I do too.
We've got lots of good confessions like Lisha. And Lisha, we appreciate you being here. And we appreciate all of our listeners joining us until the next time. So thanks, guys.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.